Well, I think that's a very good question.
Check out our new YouTube video, Good Question, issuesetc.org, and click support. Good questions, better answers, issues, etc. Watch the short YouTube video, Good Question, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Well, you know, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
No, that's a good question.
You never got this from me, just to make all of our lives easier.
Okay.
If they're 14 and under, just send them right there if they need an abortion. Okay.
Do they need ID or something?
They won't need ID, but their protocols aren't as strict as ours, and they don't get audited the same way that you do, like with the trunk. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but it's like, oh, but she's a minor. Okay, yeah, so, you know, she's still entitled to care without mom knowing what the hell's going on.
That's the voice of a Planned Parenthood manager in Perth Amboy, New Jersey, who is, at the time when the videotape is being taken surreptitiously, believes she is helping a pimp try to hide his underage sex ring and telling him where he can take 14-year-old girls in his employ for abortions with no questions asked. It's hard to believe that this actually takes place, but apparently this was caught without very much effort on videotape there in New Jersey by someone posing as a pimp and another person there as a prostitute. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, February the 10th. Joining us to talk about this and congressional efforts to ban federal funding for abortion in all cases, Colleen Carroll Campbell. She's a regular guest. She's host of a weekly radio and television program called Faith and Culture, and she's author of the book The New Faithful. She also writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Watched the video of this New Jersey Planned Parenthood clinic and the way that the employee there was willing to skirt the law and the various regulations as little as they are. It's pretty shocking stuff, even as someone who's familiar with how bad it is in some of those abortion clinics. How would you explain the hands-off approach to the abortion industry?
Well, you know, I think it's a function of the fact that we never had a debate about abortion in this country. Roe v. Wade and the companion case Doe v. Bolton were handed down one January day in 1973. It was declared this would basically be completely legal because the Doe case nullifies any limits on abortion in the Roe case. And as a result, the American people never really got to debate this issue and decide if they wanted abortion to be legal or not, and if it was going to be legal, what would be the limits. And so those who are zealous about defending abortion on demand, which is our current law, basically, I mean, aside from some limits states are trying to gradually put in the legislature, those who are zealous about defending abortion pretty much at all costs don't want us to have that debate. They don't want to have that discussion about what abortion actually is, where the American people really are on this issue, how we actually feel about the legalized killing of millions of unborn children. And so when you don't want to have a debate on that, you also don't want regulation or close scrutiny of the abortion industry, because when you get close and you look at what is really going on in these clinics, it's stomach-turning. It's repulsive to a lot of people even who consider themselves pro-choice. So the best idea is don't look too closely. And as it was said in last month's case that hit the headlines, the Philadelphia doctor who was described as running a charnel house, as the grand jury put it, I mean, basically just dead bodies of fetuses everywhere, terribly unsanitary conditions for his patients and all the rest. The grand jury indictment said, you know, we are coming at this not as pro-life or pro-choice. We're simply saying this guy needed to be shut down, and we think he was not regulated because people are concerned that once we start regulating abortion clinics, it could change public opinion and put more pressure on us to outlaw more forms of abortion. And so, you know, especially in the case of pro-choice politicians and the regulators that they put in place, they just don't want to take that risk. And so the idea is, let's just turn away and not look very closely at it. And I think that's how we've gotten situations like these Planned Parenthood clinics, where we're seeing people just openly trying to skirt the law, and they don't have any real shame about it until they're caught and put on video and the whole nation finds out.
It is an industry. It's a money-making industry. Do you think that's also something that organizations like Planned Parenthood don't want the general public to be acutely aware of? I mean, they do portray themselves as kind of charitably and in a very humanitarian sense, helping women, selflessly helping women.
Right. And I think, you know, and they get federal funding, and we need to remember that when they always say, well, no federal money actually pays for abortions. Well, if you're supporting an organization that's the nation's largest abortion provider, they can put the dollars you give them into a different column. They can use it to, you know, pay for the heating or keep the lights on. But, you know, you're freeing up more money to help them run their abortion business. So it absolutely does support the abortion business. And that's one canard we hear a lot from Planned Parenthood. And it is a business, as you said. And we've seen some of the most egregious cases of violations of women's health and dignity, not to mention the lives of children who are sometimes already born and killed after birth, which was the case in Philadelphia. And some of these most egregious violations are, you know, people who are hailed as community heroes, but actually it turns out they were making quite a good living off abortion.
One of the things that struck me in watching the video that we heard just a snippet of is kind of the callous nature of, not only with regard to the laws and the regulations, but with regard to the whole issue of abortion, and in particular, any objections that parents of minor children might raise.
That's right, and we constantly see this. Whenever there's any kind of legislation, which is broadly supported by the public, to have some sort of parental consent or limits, and this includes, you know, a lot of pro-choice voters who say, yeah, but I wouldn't want my 14-year-old getting an abortion without me even knowing about it. I mean, I at least want to know what's going on. So this is, you know, these are kind of broadly popular ideas, and yet we always see Planned Parenthood opposing them vehemently. You know, and it is a lack of respect for parents. I think there's also something very troubling about the fact that these clinics are constantly popping up and being marketed to those of lesser economic means, particularly in Latino and African American neighborhoods. I think it's a real concern. You know, and there's a sense of you know, Planned Parenthood doesn't talk about it a lot, but we know that Margaret Sanger was the big leader behind this movement and founder of this movement, and she's still lionized in many quarters. We even heard Hillary Clinton receive an award in her name a few years ago and you know, talk about how much she admired this woman. And she's got a long record, Margaret Sanger, of support for eugenics and sterilization of those she considered of lesser class, those of races she considered the sort that didn't need to propagate. So that's a very ugly story, Margaret Sanger's influence, and I think that influence can still be seen today in an organization like Planned Parenthood. And, you know, if you look on their website and look around at Margaret Sanger, they'll say, well, you know, that was a different day and time, and, well, you know, some of her remarks were a little out there, but we're not exactly on board with all of it. But, you know, when we see a video like this, it suggests that actually they haven't moved very far from Margaret Sanger's views of the value of human life, and particularly those human lives she considered less valuable because they were the lives of the poor or those of races she did not consider as important as her own.
How would you respond to Planned Parenthood's apologists who would say, look, what this employee did was an exception? That was just, they found the worst case scenario.
Well, I think a couple of things. First off, just one employee helping an apparent pimp procure abortions for 14-year-old sex workers who are undocumented immigrants, which was the scenario presented to this manager at Planned Parenthood. I mean, one case of that is one too many. It'd be reason enough to regulate all of the clinics more carefully. But the fact is, we haven't seen just one case. So we've been seeing more and more of these kinds of things pop up. And again, I mentioned the Philadelphia doctor because it was just so egregious. But he wasn't the first one who's been found out. I think if we ever really started looking at clinics and regulating the way we would regulate any other medical clinic that performs such an important procedure in the sense of just basic surgical procedure, we would require more of your average freestanding medical clinic. If it weren't doing abortion, we would certainly require a great deal of scrutiny. So why not all the more so for these clinics? I think the more we look, the more of these kinds of stories we would see and hear. But of course, you know, it's easy to call in an exception because there's so little scrutiny. We don't really know how widespread this is. We know anecdotally it may be quite widespread. But, you know, if they feel, as Planned Parenthood feels, that this is so unusual, then why not fling the doors open to regulators and work with the government to accept more regulation? Because, hey, if you're not doing anything wrong and this is such an anomaly, then you have nothing to fear. But I think we've seen from their reaction that they're, in fact, very defensive and very fearful, because I don't think this is as unusual as they're trying to claim.
We're talking with Colleen Carol Campbell. She's host of a weekly radio and television program called Faith and Culture, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. When we come back a few more minutes with her, we'll find out from Colleen what's being done to try and stop all federal funding of abortion at the congressional level. After that, Dr. Chris Mitchell will join us. He's editor of the Concordia Commentary series and author of the Concordia Commentary on the Song of Songs. We're bringing him on to talk to and react to a Newsweek article. You may have seen it. The title is What the Bible Really Says About Sex, New Scholarship on the Good Book's Naughty Bits, and How It Deals with Adultery, Divorce, and Same-Sex Love. We'll see what Dr. Chris Mitchell has to say about that Newsweek article a little bit later. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for February is called Natural Law, A Lutheran Reappraisal. Questions such as, is there a common morality? Is the law written on the heart of all men in such a way that so that common morality governs or rules in some way, both within and outside the church? Why have Lutherans, for a time, rejected the notion of natural law? All those questions are addressed in the Issues Etc. book of the month for February, Natural Law. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call and order Natural Law, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An aging population faces the consequences of its choices.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
We hear a lot about the importance of choice. In Western culture, generally, we demand the right to choose our lifestyle. For many, this has meant limiting family size by having fewer children or by not having children at all. What shouldn't surprise us is that over time, this leads to a demographic shift to an aging population. In the social welfare system many countries have created, this in turn means not enough workers to support the number of retirees. Affirming large families supports a culture of life and naturally improves our demographic balance.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Thursday afternoon, February the 10th. Colleen Carroll Campbell is our guest. We're talking about, well, we had been talking about Planned Parenthood in New Jersey, the way they flout the regulations and the laws. Moving to Washington, Colleen, what are our congressmen and women trying to do, the pro-life ones, trying to do to stop all the gaps and prevent further federal funding for abortion?
Well, they're trying to do a couple of things. They're trying to make the Hyde Amendment permanent. It's added every year to federal spending bills and bars most federal abortion funding. They're trying to make it a permanent fixture. And they're also trying to limit Planned Parenthood's funding and then to close the loopholes that would allow abortion funding in Obamacare in the health reform legislation that was passed. So they've got a number of things they're trying to do, and certainly with the push to defund Planned Parenthood or at least limit the funding there, you know, they're getting a lot of blowback. And their opponents who, you know, unfortunately line up mostly in the Democratic Party, we've got sort of a party split on this issue, are trying to say, well, the voters voted you in because they were concerned about the economy. No one cares about this stuff. But, you know, we consistently see polls that show that the American people are identifying, a majority of them today, as pro-life, and they do care about these issues, and they do feel that this issue was taken out of their hands in 1973, and they want at least a little more regulation, and very few taxpayers want to see their tax dollars going to fund abortion. So, you know, it actually is an issue with broad public support, and we just keep hearing no one cares about this as very zealous defenders of abortion on demand keep telling us, and actually they seem to care quite a bit, but I don't think they speak for the American people when they say the pro-life Republicans working on this should just, you know, go focus on something else because this isn't important. Actually, I think the American people do think this is important.
I mean, with regard to health care in particular, there shouldn't be any objection because we were assured before its passage that it would not increase or add to any kind of federal funding for abortion. That was insisted upon, and we were assured even by pro-life Democrats that it wouldn't happen. So why would you object for any efforts to try and make sure that's true?
It's a terrific point, and it just shows you how toothless that little agreement was that President Obama signed at the urging of Bart Stupak, who basically, you know, threw in the towel, signed up with Obamacare, and got a little piece of paper worth not even what it's printed on as an assurance there'd be no abortion funding. Everyone knew that was a dodge. It was worthless. And so we didn't hear too much anger from the abortion rights crowd on that. But now, of course, they're getting angry because this could actually be a real threat that actually would stop the funding. So as you said, if what President Obama promised is actually going to come true, then they don't have any reason to worry about some legislation that kind of clarifies it and solidifies it. But it's like the guy who hands you a contract and promises you that you don't need to sign it, you don't need to read it before you sign it, because if he had any problems, he would just throw the contract aside and do whatever you want. But could you please sign on the dotted line? You know, it's, hey, if this is what you're doing, then why don't we just put it in writing? Why don't we just make it law? And that way, we're all agreed. And, of course, no one wants to do that on the abortion rights end because, in fact, they do intend to do backdoor funding of abortion. It's actually not very hard to find when you read the legislation. And closing the loophole is actually not what they want to do. And they're being pretty clear about it, actually. I mean, people like Senator Barbara Boxer are making it very clear that they oppose limits on taxpayer funding of abortion.
Colleen Carroll Campbell's host of a television and radio program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page. Colleen, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Todd.